Listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. Today we're looking at the book, What's Yours is Mine, Against the Sharing Economy by Tom Slee. First chapter, The Sharing Economy. The sharing economy is a wave of new businesses that use the internet to match customers with service providers for real-world exchanges such as short-term apartment rentals, car rides, or household tasks. At the leading edge of this wave are Uber and Airbnb, each showing eye-popping growth to bolster their claim that they are disrupting traditional transit and tourist industries. These two are followed by a flock of other companies vying to join them at the top of the sharing economy world. Supporters sometimes describe the sharing economy as a new type of business and sometimes as a social movement. It's a familiar mix of commerce and cause in the digital world. Silicon Valley may have its share of the world's richest people, but it has always seen itself and presented itself as being about more than money. It is also about building a better future for everyone. The internet is making the world better, not just by giving us better gadgets and more information, but by reshaping society, root and branch. We now have the technology to solve problems that have plagued humanity for centuries, making old institutions and old rules obsolete and replacing them with computation. The buzz around the sharing economy began a few years ago, but it really started to enter the mainstream in 2013 and 2014. It makes promises that appeal to many people. They certainly appeal to me. Start with informal exchanges, giving a friend a car ride or borrowing a power drill or running a few errands for neighbors, and use the connected power of the internet to scale them up, so that we as individuals can rely more on each other and less on faceless, distant corporations. Each exchange helps someone make a little money and helps someone save a little time. What's not to like? By taking part in the sharing economy, we help to build our community instead of being passive and materialist consumers. We help to create a new era of openness in which we can find a welcome and helping hand wherever we go. The sharing economy promises to help previously powerless individuals take more control over their lives by becoming micro-entrepreneurs. We can be self-directed, dipping in and out of this new flexible mode of work, setting up our own businesses on sharing economy websites We can become an Airbnb host, a driver for Lyft, a handy person for Handy, or an altruistic investor making loans on the lending club. The movement seems to threaten those who are already powerful, like big hotel chains, fast food chains, and banks. It's an egalitarian vision built on peer-to-peer exchanges rather than hierarchical organizations, and is brought about by the internet's ability to bring people together. The sharing economy promises to get Americans and Canadians to trust each other. The sharing economy also promises to be a sustainable alternative to mainstream commerce, helping us to make better use of underutilized resources. Why does everyone need a power drill sitting on a basement shelf when we could all share with the community? We can buy less and so lighten our footprint on the planet, maybe use Uber rather than buy a car. We can choose access over ownership and move away from consumerism in which many of us feel trapped. We can perhaps become less materialistic, looking to experiences rather than possessions to give meaning to our lives. Well, that's the promise, at least. Unfortunately, something different and altogether darkening appears to be happening. The sharing economy is extending a harsh and deregulated free market into previously protected areas of our lives. The leading companies are now corporate juggernauts themselves and are taking a more and more intrusive role in the exchanges they support to make money and to maintain their brand. As the sharing economy grows, it is reshaping cities without regard to those things that make cities livable. Rather than bringing a new openness and personal trust to our interactions, it is bringing a new form of surveillance where service workers must live in fear of being snitched on, and while company CEOs talk benevolently of their communities of users, the reality has a harsher edge of centralized control. Sharing economy marketplaces are generating new and ever more entitled forms of consumption. The language of a little extra money turns out to be the same as that used about women's jobs 40 years ago, when they were not seen as quote-unquote real jobs that demanded a living wage, and so did not need to be treated the same or paid as much as men's jobs. Instead of freeing individuals to take control over their own lives, many sharing economy companies are making big money for their investors and executives and making good jobs for their software engineers and marketeers. By removing the protections and assurances won by decades of struggle, by creating riskier and more precarious forms of low-paid work for those who actually work in the sharing economy. There is a certain contradiction built into the name, quote-unquote, sharing economy. We think of sharing as a non-commercial, person-to-person social interaction. It suggests exchanges that do not involve money, or that at least motivated by generosity, by a desire to give or to take help. Economy suggests market transactions, the self-interested exchange of money for goods and services. There has been a lot of debate of whether the quote-unquote sharing economy is the right name to use to describe this new wave of businesses, and a raft of other names have been tried out. Collaborative consumption, the mesh economy, peer-to-peer platforms, the gig economy, concierge services, or increasingly the on-demand economy. There is no doubt that the word sharing has been stretched beyond reasonable limits as the sharing economy has grown and changed, but we still need a name when we talk about the phenomena. While it may not last another year or so, sharing economy is the name used right now in 2015 as this book is being written. I will use the name, but to avoid repeated use of the word alleged or annoying frequent scare quotes, I will capitalize it as the sharing economy. definitions don't take us very far when we're talking about something as fluid and rapidly changing as the sharing economy. But we still need to draw some boundaries around the topic to talk about it coherently. In Chapter 2, we have surveys of the sharing economy landscape. It explores what kind of organizations are included, where they come from, what they do, and how they are funded. That chapter shows that there are at least two visions of the sharing economy. The first is the communitarian and cooperative vision focused on small-scale personal exchanges. The second is the disruptive, globe-straddling ambition of companies with billions of dollars to spend, challenging democratically made laws around the world, acquiring competitors in search of scale, and, for example, in Uber's case, researching new technologies to render its workforce obsolete. If the former vision can be called "what's mine is yours," I think that the latter is "what's yours is mine." It is impossible to talk much about the sharing economy without looking at its two acknowledged leaders, Uber and Airbnb. For many people, these two companies are the sharing economy, and they have given rise to a legion of imitators pitching venture capitalists with their efforts to be the Uber of this or the Airbnb of that. Founded within a year of each other in the San Francisco area, both have grown by leaps and bounds ever since, bringing their business model to cities around the world. Uber's market valuation exceeds that of the world's largest car rental companies. Airbnb matches one of the world's largest hotel chains, and despite being its seemingly prosaic industries, taxis, apartment rentals, the founders each are now billionaires. The technology of the two companies is often described in similar terms. Each rely on software platforms, websites, mobile apps to match consumers with providers and to take a slice of the proceeds. The software also handles payments, and each provides a reputation system that they claim solves the problems of screening so that strangers can trust each other again. But the two companies are quite different. Airbnb is the poster child for sharing its public statements, and in its marketing, it actively promotes the bucolic shared city where local moms and pops flourish once again, that fosters community where space isn't wasted but shared with others. Uber, as its name suggests, is not intended in anything so soft and fuzzy as community. It projects an aspirational image of status, quote, "everyone's a private driver," unquote. And its confrontational CEO, Travis Kalanick, is well known to be a fan of Ayn Rand and her ideology of rugged individualism. Both companies have run into controversy in many of the cities where they operate, running afoul of city regulations and laws. Both have taken the approach of pushing for growth and aiming to present a fait accompli to slow-moving and often understaffed city governments. Both believe that their innovations make existing rules obsolete and that their technology can solve the problems that city regulations were meant to solve, but with better and with a lighter touch. Chapter 3 is about Airbnb. It shows how the company's real business is different from the image it has cultivated and how its growth has aggravated problems in the cities where it operates, particularly in its most popular destinations. Chapter 4 is about Uber, how its pursuit of a consumer-driven society is ushering a new form of precarious work, and about its misleading claims that it is delivering both cheap rides for travelers and well-paid jobs for drivers. Running errands and cleaning are among the most unglamorous jobs that have suddenly become the target of venture capital funding. The lives of those working in what are increasingly called on-demand services is subject of Chapter 5 from the early pioneer Task Rabbit, neighbors helping neighbors, quote-unquote, to the newer entrants who have long since given up on any idea of community in their drive to establish growing and profitable businesses. Other examples of sharing economy services are sprinkled throughout the book. One of the limits to social engagement has always been trust. Our generous selves would love to pick up hitchhikers, but we worry that it would be unsafe to do so if we can trust them. And so hitchhiking has almost vanished as a way for people to get around. Chapter 6 looks at one of the biggest claims made for the sharing economy, that it was used by the internet to solve problems of trust between strangers by letting people rate each other on so-called reputation systems. These descendants of the rating systems that Amazon and Netflix use to provide recommendations are becoming commonplace in our digital experience and have become almost magical in their ability to guide us to what we want. But magical they are not. And a look at how they work in practice shows that these systems fail in their stated goals. They are increasingly being used to establish a regime of mutual surveillance and even fear among those being raided.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
Buddhist master Lien Tsi of Taoist Yoga is offering free yoga classes on Saturdays from 10:30 until 12 p.m. at the Lotus Light Charity Society, located at 347 East Hastings. Admission is free, so come down and check it out. For more information, phone 604-685-5548.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book What's Yours is Mine, Against the Sharing Economy by Tom Slee. We're on the first chapter entitled What's Yours is Mine, which is an introduction to the various chapters of the book. You in my audience may have been a host or guest on Airbnb, and you may have given or taken a ride on Uber. You may have ordered a meal from or delivered one from companies such as Postmates. This book is critical of the companies and of the broader sharing economy movement, but it is not my intent to make you feel guilty or defensive about taking part in the sharing economy exchanges. The problems with the sharing economy do not lie with the individual participant looking for a novel vacation or a quick ride across town, any more than the broader problems of consumerism lie with the individual filling of a car. With gasoline or buying a new pair of shoes. The problems lie with the companies themselves and with the financial interests using these companies to drive a broader agenda of deregulation in search of private wealth. The sharing economy may be new, but it does have a history and a context, and we need to explore these to understand its agenda and to understand how it is evolving. Chapters 7 and 8 explore the origins of the sharing economy in internet culture, the values and practices that permeate Silicon Valley companies and the wider world of technology enthusiasts, from open source programmers to Bitcoin advocates to the maker movement and beyond. Any short descriptions will undoubtedly be an oversimplification, and of course there are disagreements and disputes among its adherents, but a coherent internet culture simply does not exist. It embraces values of rebellion, drawing from a loose set of attributes sometimes called the hacker ethic. For example, Facebook's headquarters are on, quote, unquote, one hacker way. And it has been the word hack laid out in 12-meter letters in the stone. The company's mantra until last year was move fast and break things. And Mark Zuckerberg recently explained to potential investors, hackers believe that something can always be better and that nothing is ever complete. They just have to go and fix it, often in the face of people who say it is impossible or that they're content with the status quo. Internet culture also believes that the internet itself is a key to building a better world. The invention of the internet marks a break with the past and an opportunity to open many political and social debates. Companies see themselves as enlightened participants in these debates, with a social mandate as well as a business mandate. Google's quote-unquote don't be evil mantra encapsulates their belief that the company has a moral mission as well as a technological one. Internet culture is also supremely ambitious and self-confident. It's a confidence captured in venture capitalist Mark Andreessen's saying that, quote-unquote, software is eating the world. In its outer reaches, it is an ambition manifested in ideas of steadfasting, a movement to build self-governing floating cities, stated by PayPal founder Peter Thiel. And the singularity, a belief in the drawing of a new civilization that will enable us to transcend our biological limitations and amplify our creativity. These originated with the ideas of the inventor, now Google employee, Ray Kurzweil. Just as Hollywood is both a physical location and a global industry with a distinctive set of traditions, beliefs, and practices, so it follows that Silicon Valley is more than a place. It is a shorthand for the world of digital technology, specifically internet technology. Silicon Valley also includes big companies like Apple, Google, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, etc., and includes a never-ending stream of ambitious startups, not all physically located in Silicon Valley itself, but all driven by the products of the broader internet culture. The sharing economy takes its inspiration from one particular tenet of that culture, a belief in the virtues of openness. Openness and sharing go hand in hand. To make something open is to stop it from being a commodity, to take it out of the realm of private property and make it shareable among members of a community. So open source software, in which computer code is written by a network of peers and shared for free, is an inspiration for sharing our most physical possessions and our labor. Wikipedia shows that software platforms can collect together the efforts of millions of collaborators to make something that is new and global and different. And it inspired the building of websites such as Airbnb's. Starting with Napster, file sharing sites challenged industries that are based on copyright and private ownership, such as music, movie making, and professional photography. Social media is built on the willingness of people to be open, to share aspects of themselves with others. The open data movement looks to make governments open, using digital technology to drive transparency and innovation. Chapter 7 takes a look at the politics of openness, but the message of the chapter is not as sunny as the sharing economy advocates would like. Economically, openness has two roles. It is the alternative to commence. Music sharing was an alternative to record stores, but it also generates new forms of commerce. Music sharing built YouTube. and those new forms of commerce came with problems of their own. Industries built on openness have delivered some remarkable things, but they have repeatedly failed to deliver on their promise of democratization and equality. And the sharing economy is busy running down a path paved with previous industries. As Silicon Valley has grown wealthier and more powerful, the beliefs that you can do well by doing good and that markets can in fact be used to scale up efforts for social change have become mainstream within internet culture. It's the viewpoint, sometimes called the Californian ideology. From global poverty to civil liberties to education and healthcare, internet culture sees the combination of technology and the entrepreneurship mindset as the key to solving our biggest problems. But markets, sharing, and social good are uneasy partners, and the relationships between them are the subject of Chapter 8. The internet is not so complete a break with the past as some would like it to believe. And look at our civic lives and how cities operate shows that commercial incentives can often crowd out non-commercial forms of beings. New businesses may be built around the sharing and openness, but commercial instincts will tend to drive out altruistic behavior, and the generous impulses that inspired the sharing economy will be crushed by monetary incentives. The sharing economy is young, but it is changing rapidly. It will be shaped by our behavior as consumers, but also by our behavior as citizens and our behavior as workers. Sharing economy companies claim that we should trust them and their technologies to take over functions provided by governments, guaranteeing a safe consumer experience, ensuring that employment is fair and dignified, and shaping cities to be livable and sustainable. We should not do so. I wrote this book because the sharing economy agenda appeals to ideals with which I and many others identify. Ideals such as equality, sustainability, and community. The sharing economy continues to have the support and allegiance of many progressive-minded people, particularly young people who identify strongly with the technologies they use, who are having their best instincts manipulated and who feel betrayed. The sharing economy has evoked these ideals to build massive private fortunes, to erode real communities, and to encourage a more entitled form of consumerism, and to create a future that is more precarious and more unequal than ever. There are others who see no contradiction between the social movement and the private for-profit firms. These are the believers in benefit corporations and other forms of enlightened capitalism who are thick on the ground in San Francisco Bay Area where the sharing economy has its home. I hope to convince some of those in the sharing economy is failing to deliver on their hopes. Many others are happy to promote a vision of inequality and deregulation for its own sake, in which money takes over the role of democratic institutions. This book does not have much to say to those who have that outlook. I work in the technology industry and in my daily life have spent a lot of time with computers. I do not doubt that the new technologies can play an important part in building a better future, but they do not provide a shortcut to solving complex social problems or resolving long-standing sources of social conflict. If the sharing economy proponents who do not believe in equality and sustainability want to build something useful, they need to drop the uberus of internet culture and learn some lessons from those in other fields who have been engaged in sharing for years. Just as there is no shortcuts to solving complex social problems, so there's no simple big idea to countering the worst of the sharing economy. A starting point is what we recognize it for what it is.
You have been listening to Future Talk. on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future,